Councilman Corley.
Gene, are we self-insured for our workers' compensation?
We are.
Are we self-insured for our unemployment compensation?
We are.
Are we self-insured for the police fire disability?
The police and fire disability, we do have a, we go out to bid for that. So
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
Yeah, the police and fire is covered under a contract that we have, but we do in fact pay the claims.
I'm asking if we're self-insured or if we have insurance to cover police and fire disability.
The police and fire disability, we are self-insured as far as that, but we do have a contract with Claim Strategy, who actually cover, they're like the provider. So we are self-insured in that aspect, yes.
The city is the one that pays it. I don't know who you're saying we have a contract with and how it affects whether or not we have to pay a fireman or a police officer that is hurt on the job, which I assume is what police fire disability is.
Well, police fire disability, police and fire work as such, they are paid on the job. They call it OJI. So the city pays them if they are, in fact. This is for like, other expenses, like, I'm going to say, medical exams, for disabilities. When a uniformed person goes out and has claims for a disability, this would be the company that would oversee that. But their payments are paid, their salary is paid, and it's called OJI, on-the-job injury. And it's paid just out of the salary line, just a different earnings code. So they're not paid out of that, per se, like workman's comp. Our workman's comp for our new provider, PMA, when a municipal employee gets hurt, they are paid from that provider. This disability insurance is not for that, because we pay it on a salary line.
Okay, I understand what you're saying, and I don't have any idea what the police fire disability comp is. It's a company that we pay for some reason that I don't understand your explanation.
Okay. Well, if a person goes in front of the Board of Public Safety for a disability pension, mm-hmm. This company provides services in making that determination. I can get you tomorrow, like a description of that, and that would probably be much better than me trying to convey it.
Okay.
Because I'm giving you just bits and pieces. So why don't I just give you a summary tomorrow that tells you exactly what Claim Strategy does for that budget code.
Okay. And okay? This company that provides this charges us an annual fee, and you're saying that next year it's going to be $25,000?
Correct.
Okay. Fine. If I can get a description of it, at least I'd like to know what we're buying.
All right, I'll get that for you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Gene, so now that you've just informed us that we're self-insured for workers' comp and unemployment, I doubt you're going to find an experience mod for workers' comp, and you're not going to find a feuder rate.
Right, we don't get
because
it, like a private industry gets those, yes.
So,
but I was going to go back and just make, I was going to go back and make sure before,
okay.
Okay,
thank you.
Give you more information.
Thank you. Any other council members have any questions? Any members of the public? Yes.
Council President Merola, did you say early on that we are the arbitration costs for fire were costing us $500,000?
I know that there was discussion about putting that in the budget, and I would defer to Mr. DePasquale as far as the line item goes. I don't know if he's here.
Yes, thank you, because right now it says arbitration for fire is budgeted at $6,000.
Yeah. I don't know.
If it's costing us $500.
I know we don't have a fire contract, and I know the administration had been talking about that. So that is additions to what wasn't included. That's what I read off as to what was not funded. That's what came. That was part of that $14.5 million.
Oh, this came after the fact. So after this was printed off, then you all found out that we got another $500,000.
We found out about the collection rate. We found out about all these things.
I understand. And I really just for clarification purposes, because I've heard mixed information. So just for understanding workers' comp and injured on duty, I'm trying to really get a better understanding of. So if a municipal employee gets hurt on the job, they collect workers' comp, but they go out on a workers' comp claim. That's coming. How are we? We're paying just for that out of the workers' comp line item 79-170. Is that covering all municipal employees, or?
I believe everybody's contract is different, and I couldn't speak to because I didn't put this budget together. But I know that the workers' comp line item covers claims. So, I mean, if your question is what claims does it cover? Does it cover municipal, police, and fire? I defer to Gene to answer that question.
Yeah, and could you also please explain to me, so what happens? How is a claim filed? So I'm sure if for injured on duty for police and fire, and then what are they going out on, and how is that getting covered? What line item is covering those expenses, please? Thank you.
Stacia, I don't have the answer for police and fire. We have to ask them when they come up. That is done through their department.
Okay.
But as far as the workers' comp goes, out of that line item is only municipal, and it would be the claims and the indemnity. It could be even settlements. It would be the escrow account that we have. So it's strictly municipal.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Yes, Councilman Lattice.
Mr. President, Gene, so you just brought up an interesting point. So with the workers' comp claim, for whatever department it is, we're a self-insured claim. So let me give you an example. In my company, if I have a workers' comp claim, I pick up the phone, I call Beacon Mutual Insurance, they set up a claim, and when they set up a claim, I get also set up with an advisor from workers' comp. And my employee is monitored from that. It could just be an incident report, not necessarily an injury, no lost time, no medical. And we're in communication back and forth, and they're also monitoring the claim. If there's a claim that I suspect is non-work related and became a Monday morning injury, workers' comp, Beacon Mutual Insurance, will assign investigators to it. They'll investigate the claim. They'll monitor the claim, and et cetera. They have to see physicians, and they're constantly monitored, obviously depending upon the seriousness of the injury. How does this work with the city where we're self-insured? Is that the premiums we pay, does it include that, or do we have a separate person that does that?
It does. Beacon, just as you just spoke about your company or whatever, Beacon would have done the same thing. Now, PMA is the new. We've met with them and everything, and they basically have it. They're much bigger.
I'm familiar with them.
With PMA?
I am.
Okay. So they will be doing the same, but they're in constant.
Okay.
They let us know. We file a claim with them. Actually, there's a lot more, I think, a lot more automated and so forth. So we've dialed in on that and how we're making our claims. We recently have one, but it'll be the same thing.
Investigated the same
way.
That's fine. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Any other questions? If not, we'll move on to page 75, pensions.
Good evening, Mr. President. Brian Sovia, City Treasurer. Before you this evening is the proposed pension budget for the City of Warwick for 2019. The total budget for the department code is $33,182,230. That is an increase of $1,465,353, or 4.6%. One item of note I just wanted to clarify on this. On the pension municipal, our actuary report, I'm going to flip to it if you give me a second. Our actuary report, yes, it had within it, on page 13, it had an employee contribution of $6,728,142, and within page 1, it had a listed contribution of $6,789,083. Until we had that confirmed, we went with the larger number. We have confirmed with the actuaries it is the smaller of the numbers, so that amount can be reduced by, it was about $60,000. I got to get back to the page.
It could be reduced by how much?
Let me get back to the page. Hold on 1 second. That was found by the budget analyst while her Lynn Prager were during her.
And what line item are you looking at?
This is
85,195
pension municipal should be $6,728,142, a difference of $60,941.
$60,941.
Correct.
Thank you, Brian.
Yep.
Is there any questions from council? Councilman Lattice.
Brian, as of today, the expenses in that particular item, 85,195, is $27,848,616. The projection here for the next 30 days is approximately $4 million. How does that calculation come to be? When on May 1st, we were $26,577,000, and 30 days later, we're $27,848,000. So, again, using round numbers, about $100,000 swing. I'm sorry, $1 million swing. How does it go from today to the end of June and increase by an additional $4 million?
We have two, so today is the, we have semi-monthly, so we have two more payments for the year. We have the June 1st, no, we have both payments in June. Yes, so we have two payments left for the year.
Why, is the May payment not made?
No, May payments.
So we're going to make two payments in June?
Yes.
Do we typically make two payments a month?
I'm sorry?
Do we typically make two payments a month? We make two payments a month.
Bi-monthly.
What are those two payments?
Correct, I'm sorry. With the exception of municipal, which is quarterly. The other pensions are bi-monthly. And I'm sorry.
And what are those two last remaining payments? What's the amounts?
I'd have to get back to you on that. I don't have that on me right now.
So, you see, I keep coming back to the same point that it's difficult for us to rationalize what we want to do for next year when we don't have the reality of where we're going to end up this year. And it seems as though we've only gone through in the past 3 hours, five departments, but every item we've been having these questions of the projected numbers, and the projected numbers are completely different than what the 10-month trend has been.
If I may. We've budgeted what the ARC is for these payments. We've gotten what's in the budget for the current year is our ARC payment, what was given to us by our actuary. So we will be funding what's within the ARC from our actuary. So we will be funding that amount. That's where those year-end projections come from. That's where the budget came from. So those are that is our ARC for the year.
So right now there's approximately another $4 million left in that budget.
Yes.
And if you only use $2 million between now and the next 4 weeks, where does the remaining $2 million go, or $1 million, or whatever is remaining?
There shouldn't be the, again, what's in the budget is our ARC for the year. There shouldn't be anything remaining.
Okay, I think then once you
I'll get you a breakdown
figure out what those
two
last payments are, yes, that'll give me the answer. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Any other council members? Any members of the public? If not, we'll go on to, what's that? Yeah. It's a coffee break over there.
Sorry, Steve. I was sending you a message. We're on, obviously, pensions.
Pensions, yes.
Okay. My question is, I think it was answered already, but I just want to make sure. Unfunded obligation for pensions is $300 million. Is that correct?
Unfunded obligations for pension, Brian, $300 million.
$300 million, Brian?
$280
Oh, $290 I'm sorry, $290
$290 Okay.
How much did our unfunded obligation increase this year? All of them combined. Well, let me ask a couple other questions while you're looking that up so we can move along. I have a question on the discount rate. I noticed it dropped to 6.9% now. My question is, I know it used to be 8, then we went to 7.5, now we're down to 6.9. When did it drop to 6.9? Was that this year, last year, or was it recently?
2 years ago.
2 years ago? How much is the discount rate droppage from 7.5 to 6.9 costing the taxpayers? Is that done in 1 year, Ed, or is that done over a course of 5 years? And if it's done over a course of years, how much is that total? Anybody know?
I don't have those numbers if you're asking me.
I think when they came to testify, it had to do with the smoothing rate where they look over 5 years.
Correct.
Yeah.
But does it? We have no idea what the cost is on that, Steve.
Well, we know what we know. So your question is, you already asked the question, Brian's looking at it, what the increase was.
Correct.
In pension. And that's based on what their calculation is for a rate of return at 6.9% averaged over 5 years, the smoothing rate.
I'm sorry, Bob, 45 minutes? Okay, thank you. My next question is, I noticed that in the municipal plan this year, they voted to have a COLA increase, and it was 2.8%. What's the fiscal note on that? How much is that going to cost?
Brian, do you know, or Lynn, do you know if there was a fiscal note done on the 2.7% increase for the municipal employee increase on their pension? There was a COLA.
Okay, let me move on, Steve, while looking at one up to go to the next question.
Was there a fiscal note done? I think, Brian.
I don't know.
Sure. The city did receive, I believe it went to, it came from the actuary, and I believe it went to the finance director at the time and the personnel director. Did you get a copy? We did get a note from the actuaries stating that.
I think Mr. DePasquale might have an answer.
Yeah, so how municipal works is actually a COLA that we probably can be proud of. You have to build a bank up first before anything is distributed. There hadn't been a COLA distributed since like 2009. In fact, the COLA formula was something that MERS used when they changed their COLA. No, just because, you know, it rains, do you get a COLA? So the fiscal note is the actuarial analysis of the plan, not only the benefits in their plan, not only the rate of return, but also the draw on the plan. Many of these plans can look like they're fully funded, but if the draw, that is how many people are retiring, are greater than the number of people working, that doesn't necessarily make for a healthy plan. So when we look at the General Treasurer of Seth Magazine's report, you will see that 6.9 assumed rate of return is a 5-star because it's more actual than the 7.5. And the fiscal note is the actuarial analysis that determines the COLA. And then the retirement board votes on that, given the information from the actuary saying that it's
Do we know? I think what he's asking is how much it was. How much? What was the what did the fiscal note say? What was the estimate?
We have all the numbers in the actuarial reports. I could probably get them if I
could. Okay, so we can get you that number, Mr.
There's several. It's liability. It's how much money is coming in. It's how much money is going out, and then they have to build a bank.
Okay.
I probably have it up there.
Thank you, Bill. I'll wait for that. Just reviewing the plans, I see the municipal plan has 306. Now, this is according to Mr. Magazina, because I also went to the Rhode Island General Treasurer's website. I see that the General Treasurer says we have 369 active people participating in the plan. We have 368 retirees. What I would like to know is, and the ratio is 1-to-1, but I noticed the net cash flow is a -1.57. Can somebody explain to me what the net cash flow means?
I'm one behind it, actually. I was going to go over the accrued liability went up. So between the four plans from July 1, 2016 to July 1, 2017, approximately $3.7 million. The unfunded accrued liability went up.
I'm sorry. What?
About 3.7 between the four plans.
Okay, well, what's the negative cash flow?
Oh, I'm trying to take one at a time.
So, just for members of the public and Mr. Duran, obviously this administration wasn't here when that happened. Mr. DePasquale was not the chief of staff, and our finance director, as you know, resigned. And so the treasurer is in a position that he's not in. And just so the members of the public understand that it's not that we don't want to give people answers. We just weren't in those positions when these decisions were made.
No, I understand.
Mr. President, can I ask a point?
Yes.
Are we still discussing the personnel services and these five items under the pensions, police one, police two, five?
I think the question was regarding pensions and the COLA that was given on the pension. I think that's how we ended up here.
Now, my next question is, and I'll send Brian an email about the other two plans. Just an observation. Let me make him a statement. One of the things it's telling is Fire 2, now, again, this is as of 2016. That's what the General Treasurer just published. In Fire 2, you have 178 active, and you have 10 retirees. So we're running a municipal and police 2, 1-to-1. In this particular case, we have a 17.8 versus 1. So we have 18 workers for every one retiree. What I find is alarming, and this is just my observation, that's only 86% funded. That should be way over 100%, and it's not. Now, Steve, I'm going to ask my next question. Let me make a statement. It's rhetorical because I realize, Brian, I don't want to put him on the spot. Obviously, we've had a lot of fire retirees in the last year. Probably had five in the last month and a half. I'd like to see a fiscal note as to how much they anticipate the cost of those retirements to be.
I would point out to you, Mr. Duran, that Mayor Solomon, when he came into office, I think he announced yesterday that he's asked the Rhode Island Public Expenditures
Correct.
Council to come in and to look at all those numbers, and I think that that's part of his plan to get a grasp on where we actually are.
Correct. And I applaud him for that, and I know this has been an issue that's been a concern of his over the years, and I also know, Steve, it's been a big concern of yours over the years. Let me ask one last question. Police 2 and Fire 2 get a 3% compounded COLA every year. And by the way, I'm not here to begrudge that. I'm just asking a question as a taxpayer, especially what, in light of what you said this evening, Councilman Mirola, or Council President. We have a serious financial issue. And I'm not here, I don't want it misinterpreted, at least from where I sit and where other people are asking these questions. We're asking these questions for the retirees living in the city of Warwick that are struggling to pay their tax bills. This is no way a reflection on the workers in the city and the job they do every day. In fact, I told the colonel prior to this, the meeting tonight, what a fine job the Warwick police do. Probably the finest in the state. So again, the reason for this question is we know the daunting task in front of us. So here's my question. We're giving a 3% compounded COLA. I assume it's compounded. COLA for police 2 and fire 2. And that's built into the contract. My question is, and this all gets to do with negotiations. Ed, I got an interesting question because I know you're a budget expert on the council, one of them. Has anybody asked, and you sit on a retirement board as being on a city finance. Has anybody done, and I know smoothing, Steve just referred to it, smoothing. We hear that ad nauseum. I've heard that for years. Has anyone asked the question what the CPI has been for the last 20 years? Seriously, simple question. Wouldn't you want to know that? Well, just for your edification, it's 2%. So my question is, these kind of questions have to be asked going into the future. And I know the Mayor Solomon will be asking these questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from the public?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a paper here. A couple questions. New actuarial reports weren't online, so I had some documentation from what was online. The municipal pension funding ratio as of 2016 was 72.2%. Do you know what it is right now?
As of July 1, 2017, the funder ratio was 72.7%.
So, couple questions. I want to get into the COLA. I did a big Freedom of Information just to try to understand it. So, based on, I guess, the assumed rate of return, if the pension fund is performing better than that, is that how we determine whether there's going to be a COLA for the municipal employees?
Bill referred to that. There's a very sophisticated calculation that the actuary does,
okay.
And they make that determination by whether or not this this bank, which is an invisible bank, has three pots, and they determine whether or not a COLA is a.
Okay, so let's say the last couple of years we've had some great returns in the market. Now, can that just do you take a series of years, or do you go year by year to determine what the bank is going to be?
He does. They will do that every year.
Every year. So,
yes.
So, for example, if we had a real good year last year, and they did have a couple good years, so they did the formula, and I think it was like $6-something million was put into the bank.
Sounds right.
So when you say put into the bank, is that money being withdrawn from the pension fund?
No.
So it's still, okay. And then your COLAs for this year were worth 4-point-something million, right?
We haven't determined we haven't done the spreadsheets for that.
Okay, yet. Because I saw part of the Freedom of Information that they did do, and it was 4-point-something million. So you have a good year, you calculate, and you say it's in the bank. Is that money put into that so-called bank regardless of what the returns are in following years?
It's all, I believe it's the whole fund. It's the fund.
Okay, I'm going to try to explain the way the municipal plan works.
Yeah.
It is not just rate of return. If it was rate of return, we would have actually had a COLA for the last 10 years. It's rate of return. It's the amount of draw that they have on the system, how many people are going out, and the number of dollars going in. It creates either a surplus or it's neutral. If the surplus meets a certain amount, then it's capable of issuing a COLA. And there's another element. The element is the actives have to have increase.
Okay.
So what happened, I think it was the year before, the bank was full, and it was in excess of the draw. So that's a function of how it performed in the market, how much money was in it, how many retirees it was paying out. We had enough to pay a portion of a COLA, but because the actives hadn't had a raise, it was not issued.
Okay, so let's say that then you had a poor year where the market did terrible.
Yes.
Does that banked amount stay there regardless?
No, it actually draw down on the bank because it's a performance calculus taken by the actuary every year. So that new that number coming into the following year, if it's followed by a poor performing year, like I say a negative year, which it can happen, that bank will be drawn down. Then that bank has to be built up. And that is the reason why it took so long to issue a COLA.
So, but once you issue a COLA, you're physically withdrawing money.
That's
from
right.
So then you're bringing the bank amount down.
You got
now, if you have a bad year, you're not going to have that money to replenish. So the annual required contribution for the taxpayer will probably increase, right?
No. No. The ARC is going to be inherently different than the COLA. If the money in the bank was in excess of what the fund needed to sustain itself, then that ARC is not going to be increased unless you have performance that's beyond the COLA. So you theoretically could have a COLA that's not issued and have the same ARC payment, which occurred. Okay. Or you can have the ARC payment go up, that is true,
yeah,
but has nothing to do with the COLA. The ARC payment could go up because you have more retirees pulling in and you have performance.
But I'm saying when you withdraw millions from your account,
yep,
that's going to have an effect if you have a poor performance year because you're not going to draw back from the bank. You're going to go back, and your annual required contribution is probably going to go higher. Which
so
means
that would only assume okay, if you weren't.
Could I interrupt you guys for a sec? We're getting lost in the trees.
Okay.
We're getting lost in the trees. I assume there's a point that you would like to make us consider.
Well,
someplace
right,
in
all right, that. So 2 points. So we have negative cash flow in the municipal fund. We're taking out more money than we're putting in contributions, right?
It's 72% fund, and you're about minus one change. You have a one-to-one ratio, but in when you look at the independent report, it's a very well-established plan.
I know, but I'm
plan,
not saying that. We have a negative cash flow, right?
For minus one right now is the cash flow. That goes up and down depending on years and
So the only point I want to make, 65% is considered critical status. This is at 72%. And this is the model plan, and I'm not beseeching anybody about getting COLAs, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, your plan is not well funded. You know, maybe if it was 85-90% or something, you know, I'm just saying that, you know, this is a good plan compared to Police and Fire 2. Police and Fire 2, we don't even care what the
one
ratio. They get a 3% compounded COLA, no matter what. So if they have a lousy year, they're going to draw right from the principal of the account, right?
Mm-hmm.
No matter what. Mm-hmm. And if the investments are bad the next year, that will affect the annual required contribution, right?
Yeah. Also, a credit that needs to be taken on this floor. There was a lot of talk years ago about an assumed rate of return being 7%. We were one of the first communities that went lower than any other community at 6.9. And if you look at the inception of the plans, you will see it's tracking on. So I think credit needs to be given when it should be. And that 6.9, even with the independent state, the treasurer acknowledges, is an accurate representation of the performance of these plans. Now, what it does do is it logically portrays the liability more so than the 7.5, right? Because it's more accurate. If we all assume 10%, then that liability is going to be less than if it was an actual 7%. And these are 6.9. I just want to point that out.
Right. I think we get the idea. I mean, if you want to make
all right. No, couple. This is a different topic. I read some of the actual financial reports. You've been talking with your financial advisors. And I think, Councilman Morola, you asked this question a few years back to the guys that do the actuary reports. Have they ever talked to our financial advisors on our, and they don't?
So one of the questions I have, you're looking at alternative investments for the pension funds. Can you give an update on that?
Yes. We are actually had a... I'm talking on retirement. First of all, I'm on the retirement board also. I know it's a little outside the budget here, and I don't know how far you want me to go, but alternative investments have been told by many... They were touted by many as being the way to grow yield, right? There's all kinds of alternative investments. And what the retirement board did was said, let's take a look at it, not because we want to have alternative investments. We want to look and do our due diligence for everyone within the plan to see whether or not they fit in a portfolio, conservative portfolio, like the retirement board. And the alternative investments can be very, very... have a high beta that is very highly volatile. So we have stayed away from them for as long as I've been around. And looking at alternative investments is going to establish a policy, because the other thing that you're going to have is you had all these people go into the retirement board.
So I think we're getting lost in the trees again.
Yeah.
So I understand your point. I think that this is better subject, because we have a lot of other departments here. I think this is a better subject to have the actuaries come in.
No, all right. Let me just make one last point.
Sure.
My last point is that if the retirement board decides to do some kind of an asset allocation that is, let's say, risky, which I don't think they will, but and if that results in massive losses to the pension fund, or small losses, that can affect the annual required contribution. And you guys have no control over that, because whatever's budgeted, you passed an ordinance, that's what you pay. All I'm saying is what I think you should do is consider, as part of the new administration, you have ratification power of contracts, right? So when you're talking about tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in investments, you really should be thinking about ratifying any kind of move that the retirement board, and then we have fiduciaries for police and fire. I don't know if one resigned. I don't know who is it right now. That's beside the point. But you should really think about ratifying those changes, so you're agreeing to the risk that's taken, because if there are losses, you're going to automatically have no say on it, and you're going to have to budget for those losses. Thank you.
Just, I have to rebut for the record. I just have to. I'm sorry. The retirement board has an established policy on how they invest, and it's written.
Right.
And it's voted on. And it's conservative, and it stays away from these alternative investments just for that reason. So the taxpayers aren't on risk on having a large loss because of a high beta event.
It's a debate for another day. Thank you.
Stacia Hyla, Ward 9. I hope I can say this. I just feel that the retirement board has one, two, three, four city employees on it, okay? So I personally have an issue with trusting the process of people voting on giving themselves a 2.81% COLA increase. So I just would like to read something. I don't think it should have happened, especially when we don't even have a fiscal note. I think it's completely irresponsible. You know, I understand that the municipal retirees didn't get a COLA increase, but we're not the ones negotiating those contracts. We're the taxpayers, and the only thing that we know is that if you're not even coming close to getting a 6.9% rate of return on the investment, the taxpayers make up for that year after year with 20 years of tax increases, and that's millions and millions of dollars. And they know that at the board. I know we sat in on a couple of board meetings. They know they're not getting back. They weren't even coming close to getting back 8%. And it's great that we dropped it down to 6.9%. That's probably because we really couldn't go any lower, because we can't afford to make up the difference on the taxpayer end. But what I would like to point out is that the city hopes to get back about a 6.9% rate of return per year on their pension plan investments. However, for the past 10 years, the rate of return has averaged 5.24%. Every time the rate of return was low and not even coming close to what they expected, in years past, they expected back 8%, then they dropped it to 7.5%, now it's 6.9%. The taxpayers always had to make up for that difference, costing Warwick taxpayers millions in tax increases. Again, when the rate of returns are low, the taxpayers make up the difference in tax increases. At the recent Warwick City Retirement Board meeting, the decision was made to give a 2.81% COLA increase to municipal retirees based off of what their pension plans made in investment returns over the past year. Yes, it was a good market year. However, it has been said over and over again at the city budget hearings for years that you have to look at the historical performance trends at least over a 10-year period and not just for a one-year performance. The city employees' municipal pension plan is currently funded at 72%, police too funded at 82%. Retirees get a 3.3% COLA increase every year. Fire 2 funded at 86%. Retirees get a 3% COLA increase every year. And the Fire 1, Police 1, Fire 1 pension plan is funded at 24%. Retirees get a COLA increase based upon what the active city employees get in salary increases. No pension plan should be getting a COLA increase until it's at least 90% funded. Any plan can look better when you keep increasing taxes and send almost all of it to funding pension plans. The city retirement board members who just voted for the COLA increase for Warwick municipal retirees is comprised of members from the public as well as the current city employees and past and present municipal union presidents. I'm not even going to name them. There's four of them. I think all of them are sitting in the audience right now. Half of the city retirement board who voted for the 2.81% COLA are city employees. That's half of the board. Unfortunately, the city council finance chairperson, Councilman Ed Ladislaw, was not present.
So, you know, Stacia, okay. This is...
I'm just something I don't.
This is not productive.
Why
naming
isn't
people.
It?
I said that I would stop people from doing it to members of the public, and I'm going to stop people from doing
okay,
it. I mean, then I have to sit here and have a response as to where people were, if people were in the hospital, if people were dying. I'm not going there why people were not present.
Okay.
It's not productive.
That.
And I understand your point. I think the other members have said that too. It's just not productive when we start talking about where people were or should have been, or if you disagree with their opinion. I think the whole point is that if you believe that a COLA shouldn't have been given, I think that we need to state that and state whatever reasons you want to state. I think that that's a fair criticism. But I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just don't think that's productive.
I wasn't even done, and I understand what you're saying, and I clearly do understand where we are with how we're speaking to each other and dressing. All I wanted to say is, when I mentioned that about Councilman Ladislaw, I was going to end it there and just say that I just don't know. Was the city council made aware of this change, this COLA increase? When did you all become aware of it? That's all I'm saying. As far as communication goes, I'm not going to go about anybody's personal business or who was there, who wasn't there. All I'm saying is I just think it's unfortunate that this major financial change was made. This 2.81% COLA increase was given out, okay? The decision was made, and were you the last to know? That's all I would like to know. And if you were, I think it's very unfortunate if the prior administration kept it all from you. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other members of the public that wanted to speak? Councilman Ladislaw.
Mr. President, as you expected, so I was chosen to be singled out for not being in attendance at that pension board meeting. And that is true. I was not there. I had requested a change of date because I would not be able to attend because I was on vacation, and that request was denied. So let's make it perfectly clear why Councilman Ladislaw wasn't at that meeting.
I know you've stated that before, Councilman Ladislaw, and I don't think those are appropriate. Next item on the agenda is MIS, page 25. Yes, Carlos.
Good evening, Council President and Council Body. My name is Carlos Zambrano, the MIS Director for the City of Warwick. The 2019 proposed budget for MIS is $1,703,776. Currently, we have two open positions in the department. One person is getting a longevity increase to top step. That person has been with the city around 26 years, and there is no increase outside of the contract during negotiation during this year for the my department, sir. If you have any questions, I'll gladly take them right now, sir.
Thank you. Did I skip insurance? I apologize. Well, let's do MIS since he's up here. We'll go back to insurance. Go ahead, Councilman Lattiser.
Carlos, on line 25303, telephone, as of today, your expenditure is using your numbers as of May 1st, your expenditures were averaging $27,960 a month for the telephone, and you're going from May 1st to projected number of June for $395,400. When I do the math on this, numbers to me work out, be using an average per month, work out to about $335,000. So where's the $60,000 swing?
There's a $37,000 of for the extra fiber project that the council approved a week ago. So that's part of the $37,000, part of the $60,000 that's missing. And the other reason that is a little bit off is because when we did the phone project, we finished it a little bit later than expected. So we have some savings on that side, sir.
And this year, you're looking to increase that to $451,000.
Yes, sir. So the increase in that is basically $21,000, which once again was approved a couple of weeks ago for the secondary internet connection to police department. $15,000 of that is for additional air cards for computer for laptops for the fire department, and also in the last couple of years, the police department, since they don't use that much data, sir, what we did is basically put them in a lower tier plan to save the city some money. And next year, we're expecting to do a project that the police department is going to need more data, so we have to bump their data usage for next year. So that's an increase of around $15,000. We also had a couple of new circuits put in for the fire dispatch center and one of the water tower for the water department, sir. So that's going to be an additional $13,560 for next year. So that's one of the reasons that the telephone budget is actually going up next year, sir.
And on 25334. There's a significant jump there as well, somewhere around $220,000 from where you project to be to where you're looking to be for next year.
Yes, sir. So part of the, or actually a good chunk of that increase is a rough estimate of around $140,000. I came to the city council earlier this year and I kind of requested some money to add extra Microsoft licenses for the city, and it was rejected. So after that, I basically went in and see exactly how much we needed so we could do one big chunk of like a project. So when I took a look at all our licenses, we have over, I would say, 60% of our Microsoft licenses that are Microsoft Office 2010, and they will be end of life, so there's going to be less security patches given to those type of software. So we need to spend, I would say, a good portion of that for Microsoft Office 365 licenses. The project I mentioned earlier to you about like the police having more access to data in their cruisers, the extra licenses for the software that is going to allow us to do that is around almost $16,000. We're also going to need to do an upgrade for Vision for our assessor's software, and that's going to be around $20,000 for the upgrade. Out of the rest of the money, around $20,000 is your normal 2 to 5% that most of our vendors charge us every year as an increase. Another $11,000 has to be spent for SQL licenses to update some of our older SQL data servers that we have out there in the city, sir. So that's most of the $220,000 that you were referring to, sir.
Thank you.
Councilman Ricks.
Please correct me if I misheard you. When you talked about the Microsoft licenses, what was the number there? And are we referring to, say, Microsoft Office or the operating system or...
It's basically Microsoft Office. Most of the software is going to be end of life soon. So we need to upgrade to either 2016 or Office 365. Microsoft has made it almost hard to go away from Office 365. They have very competitive prices now to move to the cloud, which will also allow us in the future, our email servers around 4 years old. In another year or two, we will have to replace the whole infrastructure for the email server. So that was going to be an additional probably $50,000 to $70,000 in between hardware and newer software. This actually takes care of that, and we won't have that expense in the future, sir. So Microsoft is making it very hard to have on-premise solution. So I think the best recommendation moving forward is to go to the cloud. We're going to take care of our Microsoft Office licenses. And also for future, we're going to be taking care of our emails needs in 2 to 3 years, which we had to upgrade because that server is around four, going probably in 5 years now, sir.
Okay. So just to make sure I'm clear, the $50,000 to $75,000 that you named is a rough estimate for what we'd be looking at in the future for servers and the like. If we did not go basically to the cloud with Microsoft 365, that's just looking out into the future. But in this particular budget, for the Microsoft licenses, and we're just talking about Microsoft Office, not the operating systems, in this particular line item of 25334 software maintenance, was it $15,000 for the licenses that's projected for this year, or was it a different number?
So in the past, we bought them as needed, sir, but we've gotten to the point that we have more software that is about to become end of life. So that's the reason that basically in the past, we just bought a chunk of software, and we were able to kind of go afloat. But because we've gone over like the 50% rate of like our software licenses almost being end of life, and also in the next like 2 years we might have to replace our email servers because it's going in between the 5 to 7 year time frame, they've recommended to change that over. I think it's better to go with Office 365 because we're kind of like killing two birds with one stone type scenario, sir.
And I understand the logic. Not to belabor the point, I believe I heard you say $15,000, and I do want to either confirm that, or if you're not certain of the exact number or the ballpark number, if you could just get that information, that estimate to us later on, I'd appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
And I suppose while we're on the subject, just a quick point on this. It's my understanding that We've had some technological issues in the past when it comes to maintaining internet access, and I understand that there are all sorts of complications that can cause those different issues to pop up, from our servers to our ISP, well, natural disasters, you name it. But all of that considered, have you considered the costs and benefits of perhaps, instead of going with the idea of switching over to Office 365, which sounds like it could very well be the best plan in order to escape some of those costs on servers and the like in the long term, have you considered the alternative of, now, I know it's not the most popular software out there, but it's free, OpenOffice or something similar, because I do have the counter concern of when you put everything up on the cloud and your internet access goes down, then you're basically out of luck. And so I just wanted to check in with you to see if there had also been some study of the pros and cons.
So just to give you an idea, a couple of weeks ago, I came for you to add a secondary internet connection to the city to go to the police department. So basically, we're going to have two point of failures. And the reason, one of the reasons that I said in that meeting was basically because a lot of things are going to the cloud. So we need to have better redundancy in the city. So that's going to take care of part of like the issue that you're talking to. I mean, obviously, if a tornado or some big disasters happen, we're still going to be in trouble. But at least, like if like a light post goes down for whatever reason, we're going to be able to have a secondary way out of the city to get to those resources on the cloud. So that's one of your concerns. As far as having Office Libre or Open Office, a lot of organizations have tried that, but it does save some money. But there, a lot of times, like you have to spend a lot of time training individuals, and also a lot of times, like different financial packages don't work properly with them. They have gotten a lot better in the sense like that you could convert some of those documents to like Microsoft type documents, like Excel, Word and things of that nature, but the amount of time for training and trying to get everything to work properly, I think is going to cause more manpower and frustrations for city employees than the cost saving. I mean, we could try, but it's some of the organizations that have done it in the past, there has been case studies that basically they went back and used either Microsoft or Google or any of the newer applications that you're talking to, sir.
From my experience, I would tend to agree with you, and I am glad that you did give it a good hard look and that you are familiar with these different options and did thoroughly consider that. Finally, as we are talking a little about the servers, I just want to touch on the annex building. We talked about this at a previous city council meeting. Are our servers that were once located in the annex building, are they still there, and are they secured?
They are still there. They are secure. We do have cameras in the building, in the server room and some other parts of the building. In the future, it would be nice to have like a car access so we know exactly who's going in and out of the server room. Depending on what happens with the annex building, those are some of the things that we have to talk about in the future as far as relocating the actual server room. We have looked into it. I am, when the new mayor has time to sit down, give him some cost estimate of like what it's going to take to basically move the server and the cost of it, the server room and the cost of it. So we have looked at it a couple of different times. I'm trying to put all the numbers together for the new administration so they could have a rough estimate of what it's going to cost to actually move the server room, sir.
That's good to hear that you're staying on top of this. At the same time, it is concerning that all of this time has passed and it hasn't been handled and completed to this point, because it's one of these situations, I feel, that something can be important but not particularly urgent until it becomes urgent, and then it becomes a catastrophe. So it might not seem as if it's urgent, but when it does become urgent, I know a lot of us are cognizant that it would be a very, very bad situation, so we don't want it to become urgent. And I thank you for staying on top of that, and I hope that we can make more progress on that in the very near future.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You.
Any other council members? Yes, Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Mr. President. Carlos, I'll be quick because this has been a long night. If you look at I'm looking at last year's personnel supplement. You had a position. That's mine. I apologize. 490. You're looking at a position 490, and it's coming up with an allowance. Could be because I was touching it. Sorry. If you look at the salary, it was $82,400. It was for a business analyst and assistant MIS director. And last year we questioned that, and you identified that because the person that was there was an assistant MIS director. I'm not questioning the professionalism of the people that are being selected for these positions, but it was identified last year in the council that that position went up 44%, that pay rate since 2015. So looking at this now, and we questioned that last year. So I noticed that 490 is gone. Does that mean that person is no longer in that position? Because if I look at the supplement this year, it says just business analyst, not assistant MIS director. And now it's position number, job code 491. So is the previous 490 job position, is that no longer filled?
Is gone. It's like, so let me get your question, the first question
yeah.
is correct. So you're asking me from 2015 to last year,
mm-hmm.
that position went up 44%.
Is that from the numbers I have, yes.
So
from our discussion
yes.
in the budget hearings last year.
So from 2015 to last year, this current year, that gentleman that is no longer with the city basically had a couple of promotions. So I believe some of those increases happened before I got to the city. Last year when he took over, or I shouldn't say took over, but when we gave him more responsibilities last year, I believe it was only a couple thousand dollars that we gave him additional for those responsibilities. To act as the assistant MIS director when I'm not here, for when I go on vacation, so and things of that nature. So when I'm out,
mm-hmm.
That person would take over my responsibilities while I'm out. Unfortunately, that person left, and we're going to have just a business analyst for now. In the future, I might ask to have have one of our current employees see if when we hire more people, he or she could act as the assistant while I'm out, sir. So for now, I would like just to hire a business analyst. The position is open. And in the future, I might ask to see if I could perhaps give that person a few more thousand dollars to just take on the responsibilities while I'm out, sir, like on vacation or sick or things of that nature, sir.
So what my comment or what my question would be now is that I'm looking at this business analyst of job code 491. I'm looking in the personnel supplement, page 11. Job code 491, and that salary, even though that other person had two positions,
yes.
that salary went down only $2,400. And I want to clarify to you and to the department why I'm asking this question. I am seeing a trend, but I am also addressing a trend
yes, sir.
Where I'm seeing executive positions within a city going up 44% in some points, 18% as we identified yesterday, the year before that, 11%. One of the perks about working for a municipality is they always say, well, we want to bring in the good people, we want to bring them in. And I have a problem with this from the state on to the federal on down to the One of the perks of working here is, let's be honest, Warwick, for the most part, with certain positions, especially, is a 35-hour work week. Yes. So we're not competing with the private sector. I understand we are doing a lot of things, but when you're looking at the benefits pack and everything else, and when we start saying, well, you know, to retain them, we had to put it up 44%, to me, that doesn't make sense. And so I'm looking at this now, and I'm just, like, I look at business analysts from assistant MIS director, where the, and it's, so.
Just to give you an idea, sir.
Thank you.
The previous business analyst, around 10 years ago, he was making $5,000 more than the gentleman that just left the city. So that's just to give you an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, the $80,000 that you see there, that's the max that that gentleman of the salary or lady that does the position is going to get. So the salary is in between $70,000 and $80,000, sir. So I don't believe we're going to hire that person as $80,000. I could be wrong, but I don't believe so. But that's just the top of the salary range, sir. So theoretically, it could be as low as $12,400 less than last year's business analyst, sir.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. You answered the question. Thank you, Carlos.
Yes, Mr. Ricks.
I forgot one item earlier. So, correct me if I'm wrong. I understand from some of our conversations some months ago that the city's website is up from its current contract sometime this coming fall?
Yes, it is, sir. Unfortunately, my budget was cut a little bit from what I actually proposed the first time around. So part of the cut was the new website. So what we're just going to do for next year is basically extend the current contract for one more year. Unfortunately, a lot of people's budget got cut and stuff from what we proposed. And just to give you an idea, when I proposed with some other projects that I wanted to take a look at next year, the cut was $168,000. So I had allocated out of that an extra like $20,000 to do the website project. But I was asked to see if I could cut some things that might not be as necessary for this fiscal year coming up. We could do some improvement with our current websites, but that's the reason that most likely we're going to wait one more year for us to go out to bid to readdress the website, sir.
So how much is the proposed one-year extension going to cost?
It's around, I could give you an exact number by Monday. It usually is, I think, around $4,000 to $5,000. I can't remember the exact the exact number, and the reason being is because they basically host it and they design it, and that was part of the original contract that was done, I believe, 3 or 4 years ago, sir.
Okay, that ballpark of $4,000 or $5,000, that's fine. Bear in mind that we're not going to be here holding a budget hearing on Monday night. The budget, I assume, is going to be finished by then. But if you could look into that before we conclude the budget hearings, and if it turns out to be something significantly different from $4,000 or $5,000, then please do let us know. And I assume that $4,000 or $5,000 is basically them taking care of basic software and security updates that we're doing in-house, the various content updates and things of that nature.
Actually, the service contract and all the security patches is done by the company itself. The only thing that we take care of is just basically content management. So, like when there's a change, the person that's in charge of the website basically takes care of the changes in the content, sir.
Okay, I don't think we're disagreeing. I think that's what I said, but I might have been said it in a confusing way. Let's see.
Could I clarify something, sir? So you're asking me to find out like the cost of the maintenance contract or the cost to redo the whole website?
Well, I'd like to have a general idea of both, because if you're telling me that to renew this contract and basically have the website maintained is about $4,000 or $5,000, then I can understand that as a ballpark. And I would be interested for comparison purposes of the redesign that would be, say, on your wish list, because there are some parts of the website that I go on there, I hear from constituents who go on there, and it's really not user-friendly. For instance, I hear from people who go onto the site looking to report a claim, such as a pothole claim, or report the existence of a pothole, and there's no space on the website to report various other issues that are similar to pothole issues that, you know, one would generally put in the same category of this is a public works issue that a constituent wants to bring to the city's attention. And they could theoretically just report it on a website, but there isn't the interface to do that. And even with the pothole interface, it's not optimal. So I don't expect you have the information right now, but for the future, it would be interesting to know what exactly would it cost to improve some of these features on the website, either through a vendor, or maybe this could even be something done in-house. I'm not sure of our capabilities on that end, but I don't want to drag on this budget hearing any longer than it needs to be, so I would just appreciate that information a little later at your convenience.
Yes, sir.
Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you, Mr. President. Carlos, on this budget, MIS budget in totality, how much money was spent out of this budget in the Cooper Building and in the Draper Building? Let's start with the Cooper Building first.
The Cooper Building was mostly time and material, sir, because whenever the city goes live in the Cooper Building, we're going to have a switch and things like that. So technically up to now, it hasn't been anything as far as like from the telecommunication side. Most of the cost is basically the cost of the material, the drench basically from fire dispatch to the Cooper Building. And I'm going to try to have that to you by Monday's meeting, sir. That's the only number that I could give you. The other stuff, as far as like the wiring inside the Cooper Building, a lot of that stuff gets covered under the contract that we have with Cox right now, because when we bring a phone, they basically service the whole phone to include the phone line. So that's part of their pricing too, sir. So until we actually have service there, like telephone service or internet service or things of that nature, we really can't give you a price. It usually costs like around, I think, 300, and please don't quote me on this, I'm going through the top of my head, I think for one of the switches is around $295 a month, and for every phone it's like around $18 a month, sir, for phone services. And I'll try my best to have the other numbers for you by Monday, sir, for the council meeting.
Thank you. Any other council questions? Any questions from members of the public? If not, we'll go on to insurance.
Thank you, sir.